And another, although I would like to think that the influence of J.B. Salinger has lessened in my work, I have also learned an important thing from J.B. Salinger, which is that you have to protect yourself from the fandom. Because, as you know, he later became a recluse. He lived in New Hampshire, and, you know, people would try to take pictures with him and, you know, get his autograph. But he had the right idea in that you can't be listening to the fans and giving them what they want. You have to be true to yourself. And so, you know, if that requires, you know, living in the woods and not talking to anyone, maybe that's what you have to do. And then this was another favorite of mine in college, the collected stories of John Cheever, a roaring drunk and bisexual. And he was a representative of the New Yorker School of Writing. One of the things that they used to do at the New Yorker was that they would cut out the last paragraph in your story so everything is between. And I like it because, yeah, let the reader do a little work. So, well, you know, if they're of an optimistic bent, then maybe they can think of an optimistic ending. And if they're pessimistic, then, you know, doom. So, there. We move on to, I've always loved the cinema, and as I mentioned, movies have had at least as much influence on my writing as books. And so we always talk about adapting novels for film, the process, but I think I'm doing it backwards in that when I imagine a story, I see it as a movie in my head, complete with a cast of characters and so on, and it's a simple matter of describing what I saw. Okay, so in the 90s, I wrote a couple of stories that were heavily influenced by pulp fiction in that they were very conversation-heavy and that they seemed to be disconnected stories that had something in common that would be revealed in the end. And another favorite movie of mine was Magnolia by Paul Thomas Anderson, which also involved a whole lot of characters who seemed to have nothing to do with each other, but as the movie progressed, you found out that, yes, they were all connected. And then I particularly liked how, you know, the resolution had something biblical about it. There was a rain of frogs and so on. I like to bring surreal elements into my writing because, you know, when you are writing, everything is open to you. You can do anything you want. You know, why stick with social realism? So you can have a social realist story, but then bring in, you know, elements of the weird, because what for are we writing if not to feel like God? So, as I mentioned, I spent a lot of time with my friends Uro de la Cruz and Butch Perez. We would go to the Quiapo Cinematheque. We would buy a lot of pirate DVDs. Oh, wait. Before the Quiapo Cinematheque, there was a Laserdisc rental place called Video Takeout in the basement of Makati Cinema Square. This was in the 90s. And, well, you know how technology is, as in, first there was Betamax, and then there was VHS. And when Laserdiscs came out, we thought, this is the end of technology! This is so great! Nothing will be better than the Laserdisc. And, you know, it had two sides, so that when one side was finished, the youngest person in the room had to get up and turn it over. But, you know, the sound quality of Laserdiscs are still wonderful. Yeah, and so I used to borrow a lot of Laserdiscs from Video Takeout, mostly American classics, you know, Preston Sturges, a lot of Alfred Hitchcock. And then later, when DVDs became the thing, and everyone was putting out important movies on DVD, we used to go to Quiapo a lot, and my favorite, I have hundreds of pirate DVDs. I'm sorry. I cannot, you know, I'm not going to destroy them. And so among the filmmakers whose work I automatically bought because it's $40, please, you know. I bought Eric Rohmer. Eric Rohmer is a French director. I highly recommend The Six Moral Tales, which is six stories featuring people having some sort of crisis of conscience. The crises of conscience are not that big, but you know, the storytelling was very engrossing, and everyone was having philosophical discussions, and it made me want imagine myself having philosophical discussions in daily life, which hardly ever happens. Yeah, and then another one would be Max Ophuls. I recommend The Earrings of Madame De. That's one of his masterpieces. Also Lola Montez, also La Ronde. Yeah. And so we get to my so-called process. Like I said, I don't have need for much of a process because I just keep writing. The thing is to stop getting in your own way, don't overthink anything, and just write something from the beginning to the end. I find that setting deadlines for yourself is very useful. Of course, I myself had a deadline set for me by the newspapers and magazines I was working for. But whenever I am stuck on something and the piece has to be submitted within a couple of hours, I do one of two things. Either I take a nap. Everything is fixed in sleep. I suspect that most of my stories are written while I'm asleep. And then another thing that I do is I go to a noisy place and I write there. Because if you're say in a noisy cafe, you're forced to shut out the sounds of everyone around you. This makes you concentrate. And then I know a lot of people who have been working on the same story for the last 10 years. Don't be like that. I say, write one draft. Write one draft, write it by hand if you can manage it. And then when you are typing it into your computer, that's when you edit it. And then you leave it alone for a few weeks, and then you go back to it. Which is why my attitude towards my own work varies radically. Sometimes, you know, I read something, I think, wow, this is really good. What happened to me? I used to be great, but now I'm shit. But, you know, other times, you know, I'll read something, and I'm like, how did this get published? You know, why did they allow me to publish this? As it is, since I was publishing three columns a week for 20 years, I feel that I have published too much. And it's just as well that the twisted compilations are out of print. Because, well, eventually I think I'll put them out. But then I will cull the pieces which I feel don't really hold up. Okay. So set deadlines for yourself. And more importantly, don't think about the audience. Don't think about the people who are going to read your work. The audience that you're thinking of, the audience that, if you have to think about an audience, think about someone who is like you and is interested in the same things you are interested in. And I find that second guessing the reader is going to stop you at every turn. You know, just write it from beginning to end, and then afterwards read it or ask a close friend who is not competitive to read it and give you hopeful and give you helpful advice on how to reach the audience that might find that particular piece useful. Okay, and then always carry a small notebook around with you because ideas pop into your head at the most inopportune times, and you know, it's best to write them down or else you will forget them. This is a twofold thing. Writing things down helps you to remember better, and also having the notebook around, which has all the ideas, is helpful because you know, when you're sitting down to write something, you can just leaf through it. Some people like to leave messages on themselves, for themselves on their phones, but better if all these ideas are in one place, and then, you know, everybody's changing phones, so goodbye, goodbye brilliant idea. And then, okay, the most important thing is to read a lot. So try to read as many books as you can. Even a book that turns out to be a terrible piece of crap is useful because it will teach you how not to write. So read a book a week. Now, I know what it sounds like. I'm telling you to write 1,000 words a day and to read a book a week. And, you know, in our distracted society, where in our distracted world, where there's a lot to think about besides reading and writing, this might not be feasible. Of course, I have the built-in advantage in that I am not married and I have no children. Okay, so I guess the corollary advice to this would be, don't get married and don't have children. Since most people cannot not get married or have children, if you must get married or have children, have separate houses. Because separate houses ensures that you can do your work in peace. Also, if like me, you are imaginative types and, you know, you're worried about Momo and things like that, it's always helpful to have cats. Because, you know, cats, they're... They make you feel like you're not alone. And also, cats are always having conversations with things that you cannot see. So you figure, ah, well, you know, let the cat take care of it so the Momo are not going to bother me. And so there. These are the things that are necessary for writing, which is, I guess, why not many people go into the writing business anymore, apart from the guarantee of poverty. Solitude is good. A lot of people can take solitude. Discontent is good because, face it, if you were happy, why would you write? I find that happiness is counterproductive. As in, when everything in your life is working out, seriously, why would you sit down and write? You know, sit down and open yourself to judgment from yourself and eventually from other people, right? And then boredom. Boredom, which is a state which is disappearing, and I feel that we should maintain a constant state of boredom. Because now, everyone is so afraid of boredom that in the 3 minutes between tasks, they have to play a video game because they're afraid to get bored. But boredom is great because that's when ideas pop into your head, just to entertain yourself, you know, until you can move on to the next thing. And so, it's always best to remember that everything is material. No matter how terrible things get, you can always write about it. And also, I always warn my friends that when they tell me anything, there is a great likelihood that it will end up in a short story. I've written a lot of short stories, but I swear most of them, I guess 90% of them are based on things that really did happen. And so, so far, I have not been excommunicated by any of my friends. But that's because I always remember to let them read the draft so that they are warned. And also, I change the character. I try to conceal them. This is one of the things that stopped me from writing my first novel when I was still writing my column. Because you know that no matter how hard you conceal yourself in the story, everyone will still assume it's you. So, you know, just write it and, you know, who cares if they think it's you? Maybe when it's finished, you can change it around a little, but exposure should be the least of our problems, you know, and then overthinking should not be a problem. Just write it from beginning to end and don't make such a fuss, and you'll find that, you know, you will write a lot more than you thought yourselves capable of. Thank you very much.